Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. It is six after the hour. Let's get going. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you want to call in, you know, you can always get me, EW Erickson, on social media, Twitter, Instagram's the best because it's where I just like live life and well, they put up clips of the show, but I mean, it's where you normally get me. But yeah, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, the like, EW Erickson, and EWErickson.com. Now, global warming. I'm sorry. We're supposed to say climate change. You notice the rebranding. It's they've gone from global warming, because every time they have a global warming summit, it snows, to climate change, because, I mean, the climate is always changing. So they can get it that way. It's all subtlety in how they've gone about it, but really what they are and what they want is to focus on the climate change. Well, we're having trouble here because the Chinese have no interest in really talking to us. Joe Biden wants a climate summit to talk about climate change, and the Chinese are realizing, why do we want to wreck our economy, particularly when the Americans are wrecking their own economy? Here's John Kerry.
We are talking with China about talking, and we need, obviously, to have China at the table in order to be able to resolve this challenge. China is about 28 to 30% of the emissions.
So we're talking to China about talking. This is from Representative Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. He's a Democrat, of course. This month, President Biden will convene 40 world leaders to discuss the urgency of climate action and strengthen global cooperation on key climate goals. But before the president takes the global stage at the Leaders Summit on Climate, there's something he should do at home: declare a national climate emergency. In recent years, we've seen the effects of the climate crisis, both in our own backyard and around the world. From wildfires raging across Oregon and the West, to hurricanes wrecking havoc in the Southeast, and increasing average temperatures everywhere in between, the impact has been devastating. The severity of the crisis necessitates bold action, and the scientists and experts have been clear: if we do not adequately address this climate emergency now, the impacts will only become more catastrophic. Despite the other challenges facing our country, the Biden administration has done an admirable job of prioritizing climate action in the first months of his administration. After years of practiced ignorance from former President Trump and congressional Republicans, however, an even larger mobilization is needed. That's right. Along with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders, this dude wants to mandate a national climate emergency. It's not just that, of course. You know, the war on fossil fuels. This is from Steve Moore, writing over at Real Clear Politics. Am I the only one who finds it head-scratching that President Joe Biden, who wants to spend $2 trillion of taxpayer money on infrastructure, is the same president whose first act in the White House was to kill a multi-billion dollar oil and gas pipeline that would create 15,000 jobs? The Keystone pipeline that he canceled was vital to our energy infrastructure and wasn't going to cost taxpayers a penny. The Biden infrastructure plan is a head fake. The agenda here isn't about creating millions of new jobs. It's declaring a war against one of the largest sources of new jobs in the United States, our domestic energy producers. Some 80% of our energy today comes from fossil fuels, and, well, more than half of it comes from oil and natural gas. I wonder if Joe Biden or anyone on his energy team knows that. Do they know that in the last week of 2020, during Donald Trump's final weeks in office, the United States imported 0 barrels of oil from Saudi Arabia for the first time in 35 years? America became the world's largest energy exporter under Trump, and it wasn't because of big conglomerates such as ExxonMobil or BP, who do a lot of their drilling outside the U.S. It was wildcatters with their hydraulic fracturing operations entirely situated within the United States that nearly doubled domestic drilling. Such smaller enterprises don't have complex global footprints. As a White House economics advisor, I used to discuss energy policy with President Trump. I would tell him that we should strive to make America energy independent. but he would chastise me and insist, I want to make America energy dominant. This saved the country more than $200 billion a year, money that used to flow to the Saudis, Iran, OPEC nations, many of whom hate us. Trump wanted our oil and gas to come from Texas, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and he consulted regularly with on-the-ground experts such as Harold Hamm, the president of Continental Resources and the largest driller of the Bakken shale in energy-rich North Dakota. When America eliminated its dependency on foreign producers, it also lowered energy prices for the poorest Americans, with gas prices in many states falling below $2 a gallon. As I write, the gas prices are hitting $4 a gallon in many states. The quest for energy dominance also yielded massive job gains. The number of Americans directly employed by oil and gas producers hit 800,000 last year. The domestic oil and gas industry accounted for a larger share of all new jobs created in the first 5 years coming out of the 2008 financial crisis. It's remarkable how this administration has decided to just destroy the oil and gas industry and do so in the name of global warming. How many people they're willing to put on the sidelines? Out west right now, the national retail price, you're looking at $3.94 a gallon. In the south, in the southeast and the south, you're looking at $2.68 a gallon. And in the north, your northwest, mostly, you're looking at $2.83 a gallon, according to AAA right now. Western states, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, they're willing to pay it anyway and have the burdensome taxes on top of it. But this administration is going all in on an environmentalist agenda that wrecks the American economy, puts people out of work, all in the name of solving climate change. And here's the bottom line. Other countries aren't going to do this. China is not going to wreck its economy for global warming. Neither is India. The BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, they're not wrecking their nations in the name of saving the planet. They want to save themselves. Oh, but it's terrible. We've got to think globally. Well, they're not. In the world you live in, powered by unicorn farts, we should all get around the table, sing kumbaya, and deal with it. In the real world, where we actually live and breathe, Brazil, Russia, India, China, they have no desire to sit around, sing kumbaya, and give up their livelihoods and their economic growth so that you, with your windmill behind your house and your solar panel on your roof, can sleep well at night before you get on your private jet and burn fumes across the world to lecture the rest of the world on staying in the third world so you can stay comfortably in the first. That's what's happening here, essentially. The blue-collar workers who work in the energy sector are screwed so that the Hollywood elite can feel good about themselves, and so can Joe Biden. I got to tell you, we need to adapt. That should be our strategy here. They don't want to talk about that. We've got to cut everything. We've got to go back to the dark ages. The last time the world lived on solar power, wind power, and water power, it was called the dark ages. We could find some common sense solutions, and we could allow American private sector companies to innovate. You know, Apple, by and large, is a net zero producer of greenhouse gas emissions. They brag about it now. They've got massive solar farms and wind farms. They encourage their suppliers to be net zero on greenhouse gas emissions. It's the private sector doing it. It's not the public sector. We should put our faith in the private sector, but we still need oil and gas. You know, you need oil not just for energy, but for plastics and things like that. All those prices are going to go up. And let's be clear here. The reason the prices are going up is by design, because at basic, they understand the supply and demand curve. As the price goes up, the demand will go down. That's why they're allowing chaos in the Middle East. They're backing the Saudis off of the pressuring the Yemeni. The Yemeni tribes are at war with the Saudis, blowing up refineries, causing gas prices to go up. The Biden administration is totally fine with that. They're totally fine with destabilizing the Middle East in order to drive up the price of gas, because they think that destabilization will actually help energy prices go up, which will help on the supply-demand curve, reduce your desire for gas. and convert you somehow to electric vehicles. Notice they're not expanding nuclear power, though. Nuclear power has to be part of the conversation, but they don't want to do that. Do you know it costs half as much to build a nuclear reactor these days in China and Russia because they keep building nuclear reactors, and in this country, we don't. We've lost the institutional knowledge. The only active nuclear project in the nation is in Georgia. South Carolina was building one. Westinghouse went bankrupt. They abandoned it after spending $5 billion. We need more nuclear power. Texas needs nuclear power. Look what happened in the ice storm. They've gone all in on windmills. When the wind stops blowing, they stop producing power. We don't have battery technology capable yet of harnessing and holding the excess power. You need nuclear power. But you can't get rid of the fossil fuels, and the Biden administration seems intent on doing it. And I got to tell you, my bottom line is we got to adapt. We can adapt. We can adapt to the weather. Now, in my position, let me be real clear here. I don't want anyone to confuse my position. I have come around to the idea that with 7 billion people on planet Earth, we probably impact the climate in some way. I think that makes sense. I think the idea that we are the chief driver of climate is nonsense. I think that ascribes us too much power on the planet against Mother Nature. I think the sun and other systems, some of which we barely grasp, have a great deal more to do with the state of play and climate on this planet than we do, though I think we have a role to play as well. And we are, Scripture says, supposed to be good stewards of the planet. So I think we can be good stewards. None of us go out of our way to pollute. We all want clean water. Contrary to what the Democrats think, we all actually do want clean water, and Republican policies also get us there. But I don't care about the issue, and you will be made to care. They will make us care. We will have to take a position, and my position is very simple: adapt. There is no reason for Western powers, particularly the United States, to have to give up our lifestyles when countries like China have no interest in working with us. Why must we sacrifice so China doesn't have to? What we should do is adapt. We're going to have hurricanes. Build better houses. Impose better zoning. We may have terrible rainstorms. Okay, let's figure out how to build reservoirs to hold the water, because, you know, they keep telling us, oh, water. Water's rare and hard to find. So build more reservoirs, including in California, where they make it impossible to build a reservoir to hold water. Build a reservoir to hold the water. Adapt. The left doesn't want us to have that conversation. The left does not want us to talk about adapting to meet the needs of a changing climate, when climate will always change. Climate was changing before we were even on planet Earth, any of us, human beings. Climate changed and killed the dinosaurs when an asteroid dropped. Events change things. Climate changes, naturally or otherwise. Adapt. Adapt. We are the most adaptable species on the planet. Adapt. The left believes in evolution, except when it comes to dealing with this stuff. Adapt. But the idea of putting thousands and thousands of Americans out of work because they're drilling oil, making us energy independent from third world countries, the idea that we're going to punish coal miners in the Appalachian region of this country to make environmentalists feel good about themselves, the idea that we're all going to have a battery-powered car is a bunch of BS. The left lives in fantasy land, and we should not live in fantasy land when it comes to these sorts of things. We should adapt. And we shouldn't be listening to blithering idiots like AOC when it comes to this sort of stuff.
And now, Deep Thoughts by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
This idea of like 10% better from garbage, it's like that shouldn't be what we settle for. It's like this, like, it feels like moderate is not a stance, it's just an attitude toward life, like meh.
That was Deep Thoughts by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Hello there, it is Eric Erickson. Welcome back. The phone number 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I got to play this clip from John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana.
When a radical Muslim jihadist blows up a school, We're always told, don't judge all people of the Muslim faith by the acts of a few. And I agree with that. How come the same rule doesn't apply to police officers? And that's why I said, if you hate cops just because they're cops, I'm not defending bad policing, but if you hate cops just because they're cops, then you're wrong. And next time you get in trouble, just, you know, call a crackhead. See how that works out for you.
Call a crackhead. See how that works out for you. He's not wrong. The demonization of police in this country by the left in particular is out of control right now. And we shouldn't be judging all police. And, you know, if you talk to police officers, one of the things you hear from the police on a regular basis is they do lament the training of some of the newer recruits. They think there needs to be more training. And yet, there's not only not more training, but also this movement on the left to defund the police, which will curtail all the training. And now you got this nonsense of, we should send social workers. We should send social workers when there's a mass shooter. And you call 911, send the social worker to talk to the mass shooter because he probably has daddy issues. Really? This is where we are in this country. Let's send social workers.
No. Yeah, you're mischaracterizing them. We should send the social worker when there's a traffic stop.
Maybe we should train the police to be police and keep us protected. But you know what else we could do as American citizens? We ourselves can stop being reliant on 911 and actually buy a gun and learn how to use it and take care of ourselves. And when we're pulled over by the police, be respectful and not try to flee. Funny how that works. Amazing to consider that. You know, I've got a number of friends, some of whom are white and they've adopted black children, and they've got to give their kids. It's a real thing. And I don't think if you haven't lived that life, you don't really understand. Maybe you dismiss it. It's a real thing that the talk black parents have to give with their kids. That it's a real, and you know, I've seen this sort of stuff. I tell this story all the time. When I was at CNN, Roland Martin, you know, the left-wing political commentator, he and I were at a hotel. We were doing a primary night coverage for the Republicans in South Carolina for their primary. There had been a debate, and Roland, we're standing outside in our suits headed to the CNN hit, and people are passing him their luggage because he's in a suit. I've seen my ability to hail a cab next to a black man who's been trying to hail a cab. These things do exist in the country. We shouldn't deny them. We also shouldn't paint with a broad brush that we're a racist country and everything is racist and the police are all racist and on and on and on. It's racist. No, it's not. We actually live in the greatest country on the planet. And this isn't just something I say. This isn't something, well, I think this is something politicians say and they don't really believe it. I say it and I mean it. I have lived around the world. I lived in Dubai. I have still been to more countries than states. We're the best one I've been to. And yet there's this profound inculcation of hate out there. And it goes to, translates into hate from the police and everything else. And that I find disturbing. The men and women who would lay down their lives to keep you safe. And we're going to vilify them because of a few bad apples. I think that's, and you know, I mean, if two play that game, it ends badly. Because think of all the bad apples you can extrapolate from in various groups of this country. And none of us should do that. None of us should do that. It's ridiculous. All right. When we come back, speaking of this, have you heard what Biden's UN ambassador said about this country? The woman needs to resign. I've got the audio if you haven't heard it. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Did you hear what the American ambassador to the United Nations said? Joe Biden's ambassador to the United Nations.
I've seen for myself how the original sin of slavery weaved white supremacy into our founding documents and principles. But I also shared these stories to offer up an insight, a simple truth I've learned over the years. Racism is not the problem of the person who experiences it. Those of us who experience racism cannot and should not internalize it, despite the impact it can have on our everyday lives. Racism is the problem of the racist.
Racism is the problem of the racist. But wait. Let's go back to the very beginning.
I've seen for myself how the original sin of slavery weaved white supremacy into our founding documents and principles.
Weaved white supremacy into our founding documents. This is the UN ambassador. I'm sure China will be circulating that clip everywhere. And of course, you have Joe Biden.
Parts of our country are backsliding into the days of Jim Crow, passing laws that harken back to the era of poll taxes, when black people were made to guess how many beans, how many jelly beans in a jar, or count the number of bubbles in a bar of soap before they could cast their ballot.
And you've got the victimology experts over at The Root, which is a left of center website dedicated to finding racism in everything, that America itself is racist. Here we go, folks. It's all racism all the time, and I got to imagine that most people are going to get tired of this. In fact, I think even a lot of non-white people get tired of Democrats all the time claiming everything is racist when not everything is. There is certainly racism. They certainly devalue what racism is by claiming everything is racist, but it's also infesting our schools. I read you the piece by the school up in Manhattan, Grace Church School. Paul Rossi, the professor writing on Barry Weiss's site, talked about the shame-filled curricula they must do. Well, they've responded now. As you may be aware, a member of the faculty wrote and posted an article that is critical of Grace and of our efforts to build a school where everyone feels they belong. The process of building a community is often challenging, and I am disappointed that this individual felt it necessary to air his differences in this way. We have always held the goal of fostering an environment that is safe and welcoming for all members of the community across a myriad of differences. This is a work in progress, and while we are not always as successful as we would hope, we know that it requires constructive engagement. We have for many years sought to fulfill the school's mission that we nurture in our students a steady, affectionate trust in themselves and their world, so they may be made resilient by the interactions of different ethnic, religious, and socioeconomic influences. Because of that foundational commitment, we developed a diversity mission statement, which serves as a North Star for creating a clear sense of belonging for everyone. Essential to the statement is our understanding that inclusion is not enough and equity is impossible if we cannot name, acknowledge, and oppose the forces of racism and all forms of bias, hate, and fear that exist in our society and that seek to diminish so many in our midst. You will recall this is a school that teaches individuality and objectivity are racist. We take our values seriously. We will respond to any criticism with a renewal of our commitment to live them out in practice, which probably means off to the re-education camp for this guy. Dude's going to get fired. As always, we encourage all members to join in on the dialogue. That's their essential statement of this guy is a dissenter. Dissent cannot be tolerated because dissent in itself is a form of white privilege and he must be punished. That's totally what's going to happen. You know it and I know it. This is what's going to happen. You've got the UN ambassador saying we're a racist nation founded on white supremacy. You got Joe Biden saying we're slipping back into Jim Crow. It gives license to the left to agitate. And when the Republicans take back Congress next year, it's just going to mean white supremacy is back on the rise. It's the only trick they have. But here's the thing you got to remember. It didn't work for them in 2020. It was rich white people who helped Biden get elected. It was black, Hispanic, and Asian voters who shifted towards the GOP. Not in enough numbers, but it's still happening. As the Democrats go all in on woke, more people are coming. Well, it's not alone now. There's a school in Atlanta, Georgia, called Westminster. It is a Christian education institute. It's a large and big one. It's probably the largest supposedly Christian school in Atlanta. But you know how many Christian schools, they get really big, like Grace in New York, and they kind of lose the Christianity thing. Well, the parents here at this school are fighting back. Notice the parents at Grace aren't. A lot of those people, I suspect, are more likely than not upset at the teacher for outing what goes on at Grace. In this school in Atlanta, let me read you part of this. This letter is written on behalf of thousands of parents, alumni, community supporters, and financial donors of Westminster. The purpose of this letter is to address the board's operation of Westminster. Westminster is not part of a political party or an ideological movement, although Westminster's current leadership is steering the school on a distinctive ideological and political tract. Westminster's Board of Trustees must follow Westminster's Articles of Incorporation. The articles are not elective. Article 2 states that the purpose of Westminster is to provide a Christian school which develops the whole person for college and life through excellent education. And Article 3 provides the school shall be managed by a Board of Trustees, which shall be the source of authority over the policies and operation of the school. Neither of the above articles is being followed, and those are violations of Georgia law and federal tax law. Neither the trustees, the school's administration, nor teachers can continue to ignore Westminster's articles. What is a Christian school mentioned? There are many definitions, but how about a Christian school is a school that teaches that God's love and God's laws are the ways that Jesus Christ lived his life as God's son. Christians follow the example and teachings of Jesus Christ, and they live, or rather try to live, that way on a daily basis. The social media posts of Westminster's leadership, many teachers, and their households reveal their hatred for people with whom they disagree. All of us sin and fail, and it would not be Christian to condemn the leadership and many teachers for being angry and hateful. As Jesus said, he who is without sin cast the first stone. However, what we are seeing in Westminster's administration and many teachers is not a slip-up or occasional transgression. The current administration has assembled a group of teachers and administrators that don't teach or coach, who loathe conservatives, Republicans, and anyone who pushes back on the ideological track of the administration. This group of teachers and administrators live out hate, exclusion, and disgust for their declared enemies at school and outside school. The same is happening at public and private schools all across the country. But Westminster is not like other schools. Westminster must be a Christian school, provide excellent operation, and be operated by the trustees. We don't really need to list the countless ways Westminster's gone secular and is being led down a distinctive political and ideological track. Everyone knows what is being done at Westminster. Just so we have some documentation on secular Westminster, we will list a few examples. One, they discontinued the logo that contains the Greek initials for Jesus Christ. Two, they removed Christian from its letterhead. Three, look at the social media accounts of Westminster leadership, many teachers, and their respective households. The posts show hate, exclusion, vulgarity, and divisiveness. Attached are a few posts. One tweet that Trump is a lying MF Christian, right? Some of you have seen these posts. These are coming out of the households of the administration and teachers. In violation of Westminster's Article 2, Westminster is a secular school. But wait, what about the teachers who signed the emails with love and Westminster's website that promotes love? And on it goes. Document the stuff. Well, these people, they signed it anonymously. Who could blame them? The wokes will come for them and their kids. But these parents are standing up and giving exposure. I don't know how many it is. They say they're writing for thousands. They don't put their name on the letter. But they've got legitimate complaints. I've heard this from faculty who go to the school. I'm in the Atlanta area. I hear from the faculty that some of them are concerned as well about what's happening. And it's nationwide. And I get calls all the time. What do? Some people can't homeschool their kids. People think the world is falling apart. Public schools are going woke. Private schools are going woke. I got an email from a listener the other day. In her public school system, her daughter is a public school teacher, and they're having to read books on white privilege and how to be an anti-racist from the communist dude up north. They're having to go through all of the woke nonsense. And there's deep frustration and seething and resentment. Some teachers can help to undermine the whole agenda in their schools, but the wokes are coming for them. The parents who signed this letter at Westminster in Atlanta couldn't put their names on it. They're scared of what will happen to their kids or to themselves. Up in New York, no parents have come up yet to speak about the Grace School situation, But you've got one teacher lashing out, explaining what's happening, where ideas like objectivity and individuality are considered white supremacy now. It's happening around the country. A lot of people can't homeschool their kids. So what do? You can't homeschool your kids. You both work. What do? One, go find a classical education group. We moved our kids from one school to another. It's classical Christian education. The parents are all interviewed on their faith before the kids can come in. They take Bible classes. We raise them in our faith. But more importantly, surround them with good people. You know, my kids now, they're 12 and 15. Your kids all, because you did too, let's just acknowledge it, we all reach a point in our age when we're teenagers where we don't necessarily think our parents are the fount of all wisdom that we did when we were kids. We kind of realized they were winging it on questions we asked. Dad, explain nuclear energy theory to us as a kid, and your dad says something creative and you think he's a genius, and then you get to be a teenager and you think, wow, he just totally made it up. Maybe my parents don't know everything. But more often than not, your parents surround themselves with people who share their values, and you don't listen to your parents, but you listen to the people your parents surround your kids with, and they share your values, and so you're still showing your kids, you know, we're not alone. One of the things the left does, one of the things the wokes do, is they try to isolate and alienate. They try to make you feel like you're alone. Nobody believes this stuff anymore. Nobody believes Christian values. Nobody believes conservatism. Nobody believes America's the land of the free and the home of the brave. Nobody believes America's the last best hope for mankind. You tell your kids this, your kids get to the age where they begin to doubt things you say. You're surrounded with people who also believe it, and your kids realize you're not alone. My parents may be idiots, but they're friends who I like, who their kids are my friends. Their parents believe it too. It must be true. You can't raise your children in a bubble. As much as we want, let's be honest here. We all want to. We don't, but we can't. But you can surround your children with good people. You can, in some cases, if you're in a private school, move to a different private school. Now, I will tell you this. Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes your kids can resent it, and sometimes they're always looking at greener pasture. We moved our kids from a school that had a bigger athletic program, bigger drama program, bigger fine arts program. My oldest is an artist. The new school is smaller, doesn't have all the amenities or money that the other school had, but the kids are really happy now. It took time to get into it and to make friends. Sometimes you got to do what's right for your family. And oftentimes you need to understand that though you're sending your kid to the prestigious school, the prestigious school is going to rot their soul. And the thing that you have got to internalize and understand above all else is what happens now matters for eternity. And your child's soul is more important than their income. And you may think, I need my kid to go to this school so they can get into the Ivy League, so they can be rich and successful in this world. But do you really want your child to gain the world and lose eternity? Those sorts of things matter. And we don't talk about it. And conservatives on talk radio, we don't talk about it. I'm living the life now with my family where we've got to consider these things and what are our values and how do we reflect them to our kids so that when our kids grow up, they know what we believe and they know what they believe. And hopefully they're the same thing. I want my kids to have a relationship with God, so in eternity I can still see them and not be separated by the great chasm of eternity. I do. It matters to me. It's something that I worry about. And I don't. I think we all live so much for the here and now, we do forget about eternity sometimes. But eternity's still there. It's real. I assure you, it's real. You may not believe me. One day you will, and by then it'll be too late. Don't be making decisions now thinking you're going to set your kids up for this life, because this life doesn't last as long as eternity, and that's what matters. Welcome back. Looks like the man, they're deliberating in the Chauvin trial up in Minneapolis whether to declare a mistrial. Let me explain that to you, but first, Rocco's first annual Rockin' Affair is happening in Jasper, Georgia. I know some of you are listening a long way from Georgia, but if you've got cool goods to share, cool vendor, You know, they want you wherever you are in the country. This is going to be a big, big thing up in the North Georgia Mountains. Well, near the North Georgia Mountains, Jasper, Georgia's gorgeous up there. May 1st and 2nd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They're going to have music, food, a children's area, free admission to the public. Wherever you are, you got something you want to show off. You want to be a part of a very cool event, a coming back outside event where you don't need to wear your mask and you can enjoy the warm weather. Go to roccosjasper.com. Check out their Facebook page. They've got Reformation Brewery in Georgia helping sponsor Coca-Cola and others. It's roccosjasper.com. They need vendors wherever you are. They want you to come participate. And if you want to go, it's May 1st and 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Biker friendly as well. If you want a great bike ride, you want to enjoy the weather across the country, ride to North Georgia and hang out at Rocco's. They got great food up there too. Go to roccosjasper.com. The Chauvin trial, so they've gone into recess. It appears, I've been trying to follow along with this. The defense got the prosecutor's expert to testify that George Floyd had 98% oxygen saturation in his lungs after death. Normal oxygen is 95% or higher. What's the problem is that the prosecution did not give reports to the defense in time before trial about blood oxygen level and carbon monoxide buildup in the blood. And the judge has informed the prosecution if they try to rebut any claims from the defense's cross-examination with carbon monoxide content in George Floyd's blood, he will declare a mistrial, and he will declare the mistrial because they never gave the defense the report to help the defense build their defense until it was too late. So we're trying to navigate through to see. The prosecution tried to this morning introduce test results on Floyd's carboxyhemoglobin level, and the judge has excluded them, that it was too late, would prejudice the defense. When Dr. Toobin talked about the blood gas results, he came very, very close to doing what the judge said not to do. So they're in deep legal arguments right now. They've gone into recess. The judge is very much not happy and may declare a mistrial. We are now waiting for this to happen. We'll see what the judge renders. Volatile situation up there as well. They're already rioting over the other situation in Brooklyn Center, New York. My goodness. Now, there's another story. This one is truly bizarre to me. It doesn't surprise me that it's from France. A Jewish lady, Sarah Halimi, was beaten and then thrown out of her window by a Muslim in France. Sarah Halimi was a retired French physician and school teacher. She was an Orthodox Jew. On April 4th, 2017, Halimi was in her Paris apartment where she lived alone. In the middle of the night, a 27-year-old Muslim man from Mali named Kobili Traore, who lived in the building, broke into her apartment. He tortured her. She was in her 60s, beating her and kicking her. According to neighbors who called police when they heard her screaming, Traore called her a Satan and a dirty Jew, and then he threw her battered body from her third-story apartment window, shouting, Allahu Akbar. There are a lot of other details we won't get into on the radio. French prosecutors have decided to drop charges against Traore. He's got 24 prior convictions. Any idea why they decided to drop the charges? He smoked pot before the attack. That's right. They said he was so high on marijuana that he didn't have volition for his actions. That's right. That's right. Now a court in France has upheld it, the top appeals court has said that Traore could not be held criminally responsible because he was high. So I guess we now need to excuse drunk drivers in France. And this is, there's a terrible strain of anti-Semitism in France, and this is just part of it. And I mean, when people condemn the United States for its behaviors, keep in mind in France, they just let a Muslim man off from murdering a Jewish woman by throwing her out of her window after savaging her body because he had smoked a joint. Just let's keep all of that in mind for perspective when people try to degrade this country. God bless the USA.